Hi, Elise Castle.
Hey, Mike Jensen.
So here we are, finally getting around to the movies.
Sex in the City, the movie.
We thought we did a tech rehearsal yesterday. We thought we had everything worked out.
But it's hard. We are not recording next to each other right now.
We are not on the same island even.
Oh, fancy.
I could probably look out and wave at you, but you wouldn't see me.
No. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. We do see each other. We're making this work.
Yeah, we see each other through Google Meet. And we are recording on GarageBand, and I don't really understand what I'm doing, but it's going to be great.
it's going to be amazing.
But hold on.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's not like a happy but hold on. So during this break that we have not been recording, we have lost another member of the Sex and the City family, and that is Mary Pat Gleason, who was the lady in the, she played the lady in the dressing room with Miranda when Miranda finds out her mother has passed on. And so, you know, she passed away on June 2nd. She was 70 years old. And if you don't remember who she is, just Google her because you've seen her in everything.
Yes. And she was your mom's best friend's friend.
Yes, she was my mom's best friend's friend.
And then also just really quickly, I don't want to get into this too much right now because I'm hoping that 10 years from now when you're watching the like holograph of whatever this is in the future and we're living in a utopia and everything's wonderful, I don't want to go too much into it. But of course, we're recording separately because we're going through many things right now. We have a global pandemic happening, which I guess is redundant. We're also in the midst of, you know, a lot of social upheaval. So I don't want to get into it too much because once again, hopefully when you're hearing this years and years from now and everything's wonderful and, but just to sort of give you a little bit of context, what is the date today? This is July 2nd, 2020. So just to give a little context.
Oh, as to where we are today.
Correct.
Yes.
I also wanted to do a little bit of talking about, I want to talk a little bit more about the end of the series leading into the beginning of this film.
Okay.
So if you'll allow me, I'm going to do this as quickly as possible.
Sir, you are allowed.
Yes, thank you. There are going to be a couple of flashbacks here. So the first one that I want to go to is, I didn't realize this at first. Maybe I knew it and I just didn't remember, but there was always supposed to be a film, at least as of the series ending. These women were all under contract to make a movie.
Okay.
So as soon as the TV series was done, it technically was supposed to go into production on a film. You know, maybe not right away, but fairly quickly. Another thing to sort of flash back a little bit farther, there are different reasons given for why the series ended. And neither of these are rumor. They're both verifiable. I don't want to get into like rumor or conjecture too much. But Kim Cattrall has gone on record as saying that the series ended because she was demanding $1 million an episode if the show went forward. And I should say she wasn't doing that just for her. She felt that all the women should be on parity and all be making $1 million an episode if the show was going to go on. Whether you agree with this or not, it was never possible because Sarah Jessica Parker, it was sort of in her contract that she would always be the highest paid. And that's simply because going into it, she was the movie star. Like if you think, those of you that are about as old as me might remember that HBO Once Upon a Time was not a mecca for television series like it is now. It was, you know, movies from the box office and boxing.
And real sex.
Well, and real sex. Yeah, it was, you know, cable, which wasn't really all that well regarded. Once upon a time there was a separate award ceremony called the Cable Ace Awards. That's how infrequently cable shows were winning awards. They had to have their own ceremony. And you know, there'd been a few. Oz, I think, was already around. There was a show called Dream On that was already around, but it wasn't well regarded.
So Sopranos
started the winter after Sex and the City started. So when Sex and the City was beginning and Darren Star reached out to Sarah Jessica Parker, she really had no reason to do a TV series. Certainly not a TV series on a cable network. Once again, it's well regarded now, but at the time it was sort of, I don't want to say a wasteland, but it's not where you went to do television. So she came into this sort of at the height of her career, which is why she was just always going to be top billed. So that is kind of according to Kim Cattrall. Michael Patrick King tells a different story. He says that he sat down with Sarah Jessica Parker and said, I think this is it. I think we're coming to the end. And that she said, I agree with whatever you say. So if you think it's time to end, it's time to end. So that's sort of how the series came to an end from two different points of view. And then as the film was supposed to start, there was someone who didn't want to do it.
And his name was Mike Jensen.
Mike Jensen wasn't ready yet. And there was a script written, a very different script written for a first film. And I don't know a ton about it. I know that one of the storylines was Miranda and Charlotte traveling to China to get the little girl that Charlotte was adopting. I know that it broke up the women a lot. Like, it sort of sent them on their different trails. And Michael Patrick King has said that in a way he's happy that that movie didn't happen, because he's glad that this film really did focus more on the women coming together. So the first film kind of fell apart. It took a few years of negotiating, and then we eventually came together. We all, as a world, came together to make this particular film, Sex and the City, which debuted in theaters on May 30th, 2008. It was written and directed by Michael Patrick King. And now we can continue with our regularly scheduled programming.
You guys, I have a confession.
Okay, what's that?
And I've been holding this the whole entire time we have done this podcast, because Mike has repeatedly told me that I am wrong and that there is no way I could remember any of it. But you guys... I had seen this movie. I had seen this movie before I ever started watching this show. I also was a different lady in 2008 and was probably completely wasted and has no recollection of watching this movie. And I made it clear to Mike. I was like, Mike, I've seen the movie. I have to be honest with you, but I don't remember seeing the movie. And Mike can tell you that he's pretty certain I don't remember seeing the movie.
No, I was pretty, because you would say things and I'd be like, you don't remember the movie. Now, was it a thing as you watched it? Did you remember it as you watched it at all?
No.
Okay.
Like, there's one part of the movie that I know happens, and it's not because I watched the movie. It's because from doing this podcast, I have, like, come across things on the internet. But all of the big plot points in the movie shocked me. Like, I was completely shocked. So I don't want you guys to think that I've been betraying you at all. Like, I have no recollection of the movie. I didn't even realize that, like, Jennifer Hudson was in the movie. I knew she did that song. Wow. But when I watched it, I was like, oh, she's actually in the movie. So that tells you, like, how much I really know about the movie.
All right. Cool. So, I like that we're sticking with our usual setup of I'm fairly familiar with it and you're coming at it kind of for the first time.
Yeah, for the first time. I mean, okay. I could, like, post a picture of myself from 2008 if you want some, like, some...
This is the girl who watched the movie.
Yeah, this is the girl who watched the movie.
Okay, so I do kind of... I do like that we... for a moment, it does sound like our simple old credit theme starting.
Yeah, and also I want to let you know that I feel like I'm at the table with Mike Jensen right now, because I'm staring at him and we're like at the same place that we would normally be sitting.
We probably are just about as close face-wise as we usually are. So we have our kind of normal, simple version of the opening credit start to play, and then we quickly segue into Fergie.
This song is a little outrageous. She uses the word supercalifragisexy. Which, you know, it's fine. Okay, Fergalicious, but now we have supercalifragisexy. And she talks about 20-something women come to New York for two things, love and labels. I didn't come to New York for either of those things.
I did not either, but I guess I also wasn't a 20-something woman.
And spoiler alert, like, finding love in New York is hard.
Yeah, I don't think it's any easier in New York than anywhere else. I don't know that it's harder, but it's not easier. So it's basically like the movie version of the opening credit sequence. It's a lot. We still have our like pictures of New York, but we're getting crazier shots, and it's just a little bit up a notch. For me, this is just the idea that like we're about to see the movie version of this TV show.
The colors are brighter. It looks more current.
Correct. Yeah, we have Karen Bechet is looking longingly in a window. I'm going to bring up a lot of people that are in this who were not famous at the time, who have gone on to have, like, pretty good careers. And she's the first one. Oh, yeah, that woman who has, like, no lines is just looking in the window. This is a very early credit for her. She ended up doing the final season of Scrubs. They did sort of a weird last season. And she did a TV show called Halt and Catch Fire. Just FYI, we have a foursome of ladies walking away. And is it our four ladies? We see, you know, like the blonde, the brunette, the redhead. But it's not. It's four doppelgangers. For the record, two of them are Kate Rockwell and Lena Hall.
Both Broadway ladies.
Yes. The redhead is Lena Hall. She kind of gets the most. I feel like she knew where the camera was. You know?
And she got a lot.
Yeah. She knows. She's like, this is fabulous or whatever. Yeah.
And at the time, she had just come out of doing Legally Blonde, The Search for Elle Woods reality show.
Gotcha. And then she's going to go on to win a Tony Award for Hedwig. Sorry, Hedvig. And then Kate Rockwell would be in the musical version of Mean Girls.
Karen, right?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I thought that she was.
Right?
Oh my gosh. She was so good. Yeah. And then we have Carrie and a giant flower.
It's really outrageous. It's like the biggest one that I have seen thus far.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
I was going to say we get to three outfit changes before we even get to dialogue.
Yeah, and once again, to me, this is just like, this is the movie. So we do establish that Carrie's been in the city for 20 years, mm-hmm. and that tracks, you know, I worked my way backwards through a lot of year references, and they all basically work. And yeah, we have quick shots of Carrie in her closet, and I don't mean to objectify, but Carrie's body, you know.
She looks
great. She's in good shape.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. So she talks about how she had a quick knack for labels, but, you know, spotting love as a knockoff is, you know. Oh, but in love, a knockoff is harder to spot. We do have like a, you know, and that's why you need help. And that's when we bring all the girls together on Park Avenue, one at a time. We have Charlotte York all in white. I say Miranda Hobbs really stepped up her fashion game. And then we have Samantha Jones checking out a guy. The guy passes by them as they look. He kisses another guy. And then we have like a, aw, shucks moment with the girls. And I'm like, none of you are single. Like, why do you care if he's gay?
And the kiss between the two guys is very like, they miss.
Yeah, no, those guys were not trying to kiss each other. It's fine. Whatever. But I more was just like, why do you ladies care that he's gay or not? Anyway, neither here nor there. Yeah, so then we get to, you know, my name is Carrie Bradshaw. And we get a little tracking shot outside of her apartment. And apparently this is the first time that they filmed the outside of the building and we see Carrie in there. It had always been like a separate, here's the stoop, here's the window before. And I think it's very, she's wearing a very floofy top that also looks very familiar to me. I feel like we've seen that like weird sweater where like all the pieces are kind of like sticking out. And I do think it's very interesting that she reveals that her friends also ended up being her meal ticket.
Talking about how she writes about them. Yeah.
Yeah. And she made some money talking about her friends. And we do see the book that we were already familiar with. And then, yeah. So now we get a series of flashbacks. We see Charlotte's post Staten Island, like, where is he rant, and leading into a nice little reminder of her journey. Mm-hmm. And all of this leads us to the present, where they've journeyed to China and come back with their daughter, Lily.
Yeah, she's so cute.
She is adorable. I'll talk a little bit more about her later, but man, oh man, she is cute. And yeah, so we get to, yeah, like you said, I had told you don't really have to refresh your memory, because I remember getting to the Miranda part and being like, oh, I think this is for people that maybe didn't watch the series. So I think it's a nice way to kind of like bring us all up to date. We end up in Brooklyn with Miranda, Brady, and Steve, who is in fact keeping it tight, I wrote.
Brady is a real boy.
Brady is a real boy. Yeah, well, we get to it a little bit later, but this is baby Brady. This boy is the little baby who grabbed that flower at, yeah. This is the little boy who blew out his candle when he was 1 year old.
Wow.
I don't know that it's the Brady that then played him after that, for sure. I couldn't really get a confirmation, but this is baby Brady at this age. You know, they talk about how he doesn't necessarily look like Steve, and he doesn't necessarily look like Miranda, but he totally looks like Steve and Miranda.
For sure. Well, yeah, that's like a perfect baby.
Yeah, absolutely.
A baby that looks like Steve and Miranda is just a perfect baby.
A perfect baby, yeah. And we have Samantha, and I just put we have a reminder of the number of sex scenes that Kim Cattrall had to shoot.
Oh my gosh. And Samantha moved to Hollywood. I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's in Hollywood. It's Malibu is where they filmed it on a balcony. I mean, like, this apartment is... I will take that view. And then lastly, we get to Carrie, who was looking for something big. I do notice that Berger does not get placement in the loves of her life.
Oh, right. Well, because he's annoying.
Yeah, I guess so. Also, fun fact, all of this audio, we hear a lot of lines that we've heard throughout the series. All of this audio had to be re-recorded for the film.
Mm.
Because television audio and film audio is very different. But they did a good job of making you think it was the way they'd, you know, repeating the way they'd said it.
Yeah, and it was funny even watching it. I was like, oh, that looks so old.
Yeah, isn't
that
funny?
But it's not old.
Right.
Yeah, and then Carrie's showing us the book she's written.
Yeah, do you want to talk about the titles of her book?
Sure, we have Manhattan.
Eek, I wrote.
The second one is the one that she actually wrote, which is called...
Isn't it just Sex and the City?
Yeah, Sex and the City. And then the other one, I was like, is it called A Single Life City? Like, I had to pause it and go back, and I'm like, A Single City Life?
I think it's just A Single Life.
Yeah. But it says city in, like, this weird crossword thing.
Right. But then we get to 1010 Fifth Avenue, and she's still in love. This is between 82nd and 83rd Street, for those keeping track. And I put, now it feels like the movie's really beginning.
And have they been together for 3 years?
3 books, and 3 years later.
It seems like they would have been together for 5 years.
Okay.
Right, because the series ended in 2003. And Carrie has an Eiffel Tower purse, which I think is sort of a nod to her last episodes in Paris.
Right, but I mean, like, I would want to forget that shit.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. Yeah, it's a little bit surprising. And they're seeing an apartment. Big has a good feeling about this one. And she's always loved this block. I'm like, is that because it's right across the street from the museum?
And they've seen 33 apartments.
Yeah, they've seen 33. They're going to see 3C. And, you know, the line is finding the perfect apartment in New York City is like finding the perfect partner. And I will say, like, apartment shopping in New York City, I've never done it. I imagine it's very stressful.
Like buying an apartment?
Correct.
Well, yeah, and also, though, finding the... I have yet to have an experience where I'm, like, finding the perfect apartment. Usually it's just, like, what's available that I can afford.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I guess if you have a lot of money and you're looking for the perfect place, I don't know. It doesn't sound that bad to me. We're quickly informed by the real estate agent that this apartment is the worst.
And do you know who that is?
So the real estate agent, I do not know. I know the building manager.
Yes.
And that's Malcolm Getz.
And who is a actor of stage and screen.
Yeah, I guess he's best known probably for Caroline in the City.
Maybe. I mean, I saw him in a Broadway show called The Story of My Life, which was a two-person show that ran for, I think, a week. But I was at one of those performances.
Ah, gotcha. I missed that one. Oh, that's nice. You can tell him that.
So yeah, then they say there's one more building, or Carrie makes this comment because the apartment is pretty atrocious for the building it's in.
It is, and I wrote, it's hard to imagine that unit is in that building.
Yeah, it's very strange, unless whoever lived there for years, and, you know, but then makes a comment that they love the building, so if anything else opens up, which I was like, you just love the location. You know, so how do you know
right.
that the other... So anyway, he lets them know that there is another apartment in the building that he has not even put on the market. And we see him
correct.
Press the penthouse button, which we know it's going to be good.
Yeah, it says, shall we take a look? It's more than you were looking to pay. Yeah, we get to the penthouse and it is sort of insane.
Yeah. Hello, I live here.
Yeah. And, you know... So once again, I did watch this with Michael Patrick King's commentary. So I'm going to have some things that he had to say. I'm also going to have, I think I watched the extended version. So I think I'll have some moments that were cut from the film. And in fact, I also have a few scenes that entirely were cut that aren't even in the extended version that I'll probably sprinkle in when we get to where I think they were supposed to go.
Okay, now you're bragging.
Well, hopefully it doesn't confuse things. That's my real worry. You know, and Michael Patrick King says right now, spoiler, I'm assuming you've watched the entire film, if you're listening to this, that this was never meant to be their apartment. That they were actually trying to present an apartment that didn't even really fit Carrie's personality. Mm. That it's so grand and ostentatious. And I don't know exactly how I feel about that, but I think it's an interesting concept. But I also get the feeling this may have been a setup. Don't you feel like Big maybe knew that they were looking at this apartment too?
Oh, I didn't think of that.
Oh, I don't know why. It feels very much like, sure, we'll take a look at this surprise apartment.
And then, like, the way he buys it, where he's just like, I'll take it.
And Malcolm first refers to her as your wife.
Your wife has quite a sense of humor.
Which sort of brings up the whole, you know, he's my boyfriend.
Which brings up the, aren't I a little old to be your boyfriend?
So you're my man friend. So she's wearing a belt in this. I don't know if you noticed it. And full disclosure, I did not. I just don't notice those things. But she's wearing kind of a big, like, studded belt that I guess she wears a lot throughout the film. So if you watch it again, be on the lookout for this belt. They actually called the belt Roger because they used it so often. We go to the master bedroom, and we're sort of wondering how this is even available. It was a nasty divorce. You know, if you live here, what is there to fight about? And then she opens the closet.
And it's, like, an awful closet.
I guess it is. In contrast to the closet we're going to see later on.
Right. It's like, how does the closet later on even fit in this closet?
Well, because even right now, when Big says, I can build you a better closet, I wrote, can he?
And this apartment actually cost $25 million.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he says, welcome home, baby. And he says he's ready to sign some papers, which makes me feel like this was a setup.
Because, like, yeah, you can't buy an apartment that quickly.
Right, he's just, like, ready to go. So we cut to Carrie, Miranda, and Charlotte in Midtown. And we reiterate that Carrie keeps her sweaters in her closet.
And also he says the kitchen needs work. Of course, I don't know about that because I keep sweaters in my stove.
There was a few things I thought about this. Welcome home, baby. Can we afford this? I got it. Yeah, and my initial response was like, what is he doing? Buying a coffee or picking up the check? Which is the first thing she says. And, yeah, so they're at over by Rockefeller Center, which is where Christie's is. And I wrote down, like, when she says, I keep sweaters in my stove, lots of indicating. Like, they're trying to, like, really go back to the series and the different things. And
yeah, sort of the greatest hits.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Miranda has questions. And, you know, there was an interview with Sarah Jessica Parker where she was sort of talking about her relationship with other characters and how really, like, Miranda was... I'm going to say the wrong word, not her foil, but like the one who was going to question her. Like Miranda was the one who was going to question Carrie. And in fact, that's sort of why Carrie in that moment is like, I know you have all the questions because she knows what's coming. She knows that as soon as she tells Miranda, Big is buying this crazy huge house for us, that Miranda's going to, you know, wonder what the details are. And yeah, we do start to see we're outside of Christie's here, which for those that don't know is a big auction house in New York City. Yeah, and Carrie shuts down the questions and tells Miranda just to feel what she wants her to feel. Jealous.
And Miranda's jealous. She lives in Brooklyn. But New York Magazine said that Brooklyn is the new Manhattan. And to be honest, you know, Brooklyn's very expensive.
I think especially now, it's... Yes, it is very expensive in Brooklyn now and a much more happening place to be. So, yeah, so Samantha's there. They all scream because that's what happens when you see people, I guess. And then we head into Christie's. And it's the rare occasion that brought all types of New York women together. And we learn about Blair Elkin. And I'm a little surprised we don't know who this model is.
Okay, should we?
I she just looks familiar enough that I'm surprised there's no credit for her. If anyone knows, you know, reach out.
Is she a real person?
Blair Elkin is not.
Blair Elkin is a near anagram for the actress Ellen Barkin, who in 2006 had auctioned off at Christie's the jewelry that her husband had given her.
I was just curious about the actress who played, whose picture is up in the auction house. But yeah, this is, it's funny in the commentary how Michael Patrick King says, this is actually based on an actress. But yeah, it doesn't take a whole lot of research to look up. And in fact, there was a flower ring. Yeah, so the auction is basically selling off all the jewelry she'd been given. For the record, the woman who is the auctioneer here is Lorna Kelly. She was a real auctioneer. She worked for Sotheby's, not for Christie's, but, you know, close enough. And she did pass away in 2016.
Yeah, so Lorna Kelly was a real... and there's some really cool information I looked online. There's a New York Times article that's all about her. I don't know if you saw it. But yeah, she was like an Upper East Side socialite. Really, really cool life. She passed away when she was 70 years old in 2016. And Yeah, it's a cool thing that like a Sex and the City does this a lot, where they use real New York people that necessarily are not like famous, you know, to anyone else, but it's a New York thing. Yeah.
So so we get to Lot 39. MPK had wanted the paddle to be 69. Get it? Christie's doesn't have paddle 69, so instead we have paddle 969. We're starting the bidding at $10,000, and Sam is competing against someone on a phone.
I called this right away when, because they were like, she's bidding for someone on the phone. And I wrote, Bennett Smith.
Yeah. And Samantha ups her bid, 50 fucking thousand. And I do like, yeah, the mysterious phone bidder ups it to 55,000, and our colorful bidder is out. So that is a lot of money to spend on a ring.
Yeah. I mean, $10,000 is a lot of money to spend on a ring.
Correct, yes.
I mean, I'm probably going to go to, like, Dress Barn and see what, like, is free with purchase.
That's the way to go. So we cut to the bathroom with Daphne Ruben Vega.
And I found out. I recognize her, too.
Yeah, she's a big theater, and she's in a lot of film as well, but of course, she's most famous for Rent.
Originated the role of Mimi. She played Fantine in the Les Mis revival.
Her character's name is Baby-Voiced Woman.
Yeah, which I think is funny, but...
It is kind of funny. He does talk about how, because it's not super unsimilar to Daphne Ruben Vega's voice.
No, I thought it was. I didn't think she was necessarily acting differently.
Right. But he does say that he had to have her come in and loop, which means like to record after the fact certain things, and that he's like, and she had the same voice. I'm like, yeah, it's because it's her voice.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, and it sort of pointed out that the auction is kind of sad. And, you know, DRV thought it was just sad because she knew her.
Oh, sort of DRV. DRV.
There
I was
you
like,
go.
What is this? Okay.
My good friend DRV.
I know, right?
And sort of tells the story of this woman who, you know, was a waitress and married a rich and famous guy and had everything that she wanted, and then one day found herself, you know, unceremoniously thrown to the curb.
I'm going to do all that except the curb part.
Just hold on somehow. You know what? I wouldn't mind the curb as long as I get all the jewelry.
Yeah, sure. I'll just have that life.
And so we get to some sort of uncanny big parallels, I guess, of like he's been married several times and they're not married and she was a smart girl until she fell in love, and Miranda is trying to not look too know-it-all, I feel like, but there's that moment between Carrie and Miranda.
She's a smart girl because she fell in love.
And then we end up at Biggs, and Carrie is thinking about selling her apartment.
Whilst shucking corn.
Correct. Yeah. It's a nice, I like that sort of, it's like Law and Order acting where like you're talking, but you're also like putting things on a shelf.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, they do this a lot. Carrie and Big in his apartment, cooking dinner, drinking wine. I've never seen Carrie do corn work before though.
I also believe they would buy pre-shucked corn.
Yeah. And I can't picture either of them eating corn, especially with the way that they have been kissing in this movie, which is like some real interesting mouth work as well.
And you know, Carrie wants the apartment to be ours, not ours, but theirs. And she says she has to be smart, you know, like she would have no legal rights. They're not married.
Do you want to get married?
Well, I didn't think that was something that was possible. And we just get into the most awkward, I don't know, do you want to get married?
Mr. Big goes to Chipotle and proposes to Carrie. Like, that's what's happening here. He's like, I wouldn't mind getting married to you.
And just like that, they're getting married. And she doesn't want a diamond.
Should we get you a diamond?
No. Just get me a really big closet.
And I will say that it's not the same, but it is reminiscent to me of when Charlotte got engaged to Trey.
Right, because there won't be trumpets.
Yeah, and there's also just no intent.
No, it's just like, it's very transactional.
I don't know. What do you want to do?
Right.
Like, that's not the best way to decide to get married to someone, but...
I think that's how my parents decided to get married, actually.
Interesting.
And they're still married, so...
So we get to Carrie, Miranda, and Charlotte at lunch. For the record, this was filmed at 4 o'clock in the morning. Just fun fact.
At the Modern, right?
Is that where it is? I wasn't sure, actually. Mm-hmm. That looks right, though. And it's almost like Charlotte knows. You can sort of see as Carrie starts to talk... And Charlotte's kind of looking like, where is this conversation going? And Carrie announces and Charlotte screams. And Charlotte explains the situation to the room. And people are impressed.
And do you recognize one of those background actresses?
Oh, I don't. Who should I know?
So, as not background actresses, because she is so much more than that, but as Carrie screams, or Charlotte screams, right behind her, you will see Tony Award winner Stephanie J. Block.
Oh, wow. I didn't notice that. Yeah. That's funny.
Tom actually pointed that out to me and sent me a picture of it. And I looked online, and she's not credited. Like, I Googled it, and some people on, like, the Broadway World message boards had talked about it before. So, you know, they know their stuff sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah, I can send you the picture. And it looks like her, so.
Yeah. And then Carrie is mortified, and Miranda is deaf.
Yeah, Miranda's, like, not having it.
Yeah, I think Miranda is still skeptical.
Of course.
So we go to the West Coast. We see Samantha Jones management.
Yeah, we don't really learn, like, we know that she manages Smith, but is that the only client she has? And if so... Well,
I have a little bit of a journey here. Okay. So yeah, we'll talk about this, yeah, as we go along, yeah. And Carrie's made a decision, and Sam thinks it's Botox. And I say at first, we just get some posters and magazine covers that make me think Smith may be her only client. I'm not quite sure yet. Carrie, for the record, is at the Diane von Furstenberg in the Meatpacking District.
I knew that.
Yeah, and Carrie shares the news, and Samantha doesn't really take it all that great. And then I wrote, I think Smith is her only client.
Yeah, you just see that huge thing, which he's a huge movie star, but, like, would she need that whole office for just him?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, Michael Patrick King talks about how Samantha was in PR. Like, she wasn't a manager, but in his mind, she sort of turned Smith into a project.
Right.
Or, sorry, turned Smith into a product.
And a project.
And a project. And, like, is sort of selling him this way. Yeah, so it's an interesting situation where we now have Samantha. Clearly, like, her sole client is Smith. Yeah, and, you know, Samantha doesn't really believe in marriage, and then she has to go.
Botox works every time.
It also feels like it's sort of established that Samantha gets back to New York quite a bit.
I thought of that. Yeah, I thought of that for sure when she got back for the auction. I was like, wait, does she
And she's like, I'll see you this week for brunch or something like that. And you're like, oh, you go to New York a lot.
Like, how much money does she have? Yeah, and then did you notice Carrie's phone has duct tape on it?
Yeah, well, I have. So that's the same phone that was used in the TV series. That was her cell phone from the end of the TV series when she gets that phone call from John at the end. But it was sort of, they were like, well, this would be a really old phone. So Sarah Jessica actually took tape and, like, put tape on the phone to make it seem as though she'd had it for a very long time.
Because Carrie wouldn't care about a phone.
Correct. Yeah, I guess that's the idea behind it. Samantha calls Carrie back and says she was in shock. For the record, I don't know if you noticed the two Golden Globes that are in Sam's office.
Oh, no.
Yeah, apparently those are John Melfi as a producer on the TV series and on the film. And those are the two Golden Globes that he won as part of the team for Sex and the City.
And they must both belong to Smith.
Yeah, Smith must be a double Golden Globe winner.
Or one of her other clients that she doesn't care about.
Right. And then, you know, she had Carrie in the We're Never Getting Married file. And I do love Carrie's response of, you know, sorry for all the extra paperwork.
Yeah, now the only two people left in that file are Elise Castle and Mike Jensen.
I was going to say, I'm still in your file, Samantha.
Wah, wah.
And then Carrie asked Samantha to be maid of honor.
Which I was surprised by. Wouldn't that be Miranda?
Yeah, you would think it'd be Miranda. I wonder if Carrie was like, Samantha's the planner.
Yeah, Samantha maybe? Knows and how Samantha, to throw a party.
And like Miranda's a lawyer with a baby, like probably doesn't have quite as much time.
And doesn't really want a wedding.
Correct. She can end up getting married, like, in the backyard of a church or something like that. So we get to Carrie, Charlotte, and Anthony planning the wedding. We do get a quick sneak... We do get a quick peek at the guest list. Did you look at this at all?
No, I didn't really see it. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't in my version.
Oh, maybe not. But it's pretty fast. But we do see... Like, we have Samantha and Smith. We have several Goldenblatts. You know, we have, so we have the Golden Blacks.
Yeah, it definitely was. I don't think it was. So just so everyone knows, Mike watched the extended version and I watched the theatrical release.
So there are moments that I'm going to talk about that you may not have seen. But yeah, it has Sam and Smith. It has the Golden Blacks. It has the Hob Bradys. It has Stanford and Marcus. And then it has several Prestons. So clearly, you know, John has family. It has Enid and Guest.
Maybe she found love.
So we have Carrie's boss from Vogue and a guest. So I'm not sure if it's Wallace Shawn. Or it could be Wallace Shawn still. You never know. Maybe they're still together.
I didn't realize Marcus and Stanford were still together because you don't see Marcus at all.
Right. Yeah, yeah. We don't see him at all, but he's on the guest list. And then we also do have, I think the last person on this front page, we do have Andre Leon Talley, who we're going to see in the episode later, but they're apparently good friends enough that he's invited to the wedding.
Well, Carrie works at Vogue.
That is true, yeah. So he wants them to cut the invites. I wrote, he wants them to cut the invites from 76 to 75, and I guess that means I'm not getting a plus one.
I'm sorry, Mike.
I'm just saying, going from an even number to an odd number.
Well, because there's 76 trombones. So I guess, making a Music Man reference, one of the Prestons that got invited was not Robert Preston.
Ba-dum-bum. So we established that Charlotte got Anthony for Carrie, that that's her wedding gift. And then we sort of get into, like, finding, you know, oh, I think that she's so decisive in cutting someone that they're like, I hope you're decisive with the location and the dress. And Carrie has the dress.
She has the dress.
And Charlotte and Anthony are very excited.
But the dress is actually... Sorry, I have this article that I was reading on E! Online, Sex and the City, Movie Secrets Revealed. So her vintage dress she found is actually a white silk crepe suit from Christian Dior 2008 Cruise Collection. The jacket was $3,785 and the skirt was $2,215.
Yeah, I think it's sort of funny that it's like, the bride wore a dress by no one. And I'm like, that's actually a very expensive dress by a very important designer.
But it isn't very Carrie at all.
I mean, it's I think that we're judging Carrie by Carrie 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. And I suppose by the huge flower dress she was wearing on the street earlier.
Carrie 5, 6, 7, 8. Da 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 da.
But I can see Carrie in this moment. I think that part of the idea of this is that they're not making a big deal out of getting married. That it's not about the wedding. It's right. About being married. So she found this, what she considers a simple dress, even though it's very expensive. You know, they're not having a diamond. They didn't really get engaged. They're just getting married. And so I think they're kind of trying to show us a Carrie who doesn't care about those things quite as much.
But then it changes.
So we get to Charlotte and we have the puppies. I will say I didn't notice the oil portrait of the dogs on the wall behind her. But apparently when you watch the scene, in this scene, the camera goes up and the puppies are in an oil painting in the hallway behind her.
Oh, I didn't notice either.
Yeah. And Carrie is on page 6 and
Charlotte screams. Yeah.
Yeah, more screaming. Charlotte screams a lot in this movie.
Charlotte. I scream a lot too, though.
I was going to say, Charlotte is the new Elise.
Yeah. The single gal, Carrie Bradshaw, will be married to financier. Is that how you say it? How is it? Financier.
Like something like that. Financier.
Jean-James. I don't know why I did that. Like Jean Valjean. You
might be real Jean-James. Yeah.
John
James. He's Jean-James Preston.
2, 4, 6, 0. Sorry. John James Preston. It freaks me out every time she says John in this movie. I was just like, what?
Well, then it's nice that she doesn't say it that often because we go back to calling him Big real soon.
Right. But when she never calls him Big.
Yeah. So she reads the article. And so we get to Carrie at Vogue because Enid already knows, obviously. And so I guess this is a very rare instance where they did film at Vogue. And Anna Wintour was a really big help in making that happen. However, the office that they wanted to shoot in, that would have been, I'm not sure if it would have been Anna Wintour's office, but it was being used for something else. So they are in the Vogue offices, but they are down a few floors at Teen Vogue. And that's the office space where they filmed this is at Teen Vogue.
I feel like Teen Vogue, though, lately has really been, they've been doing some good reporting. Yeah.
Yeah, Teen Vogue's kind of a big deal. They've stepped up to the plate.
Kudos.
And they're doing a beauty at all ages spread.
Yeah. There can be happiness over 40.
Enid wants Carrie to be 40. And she'd be in bridal couture. And Carrie kind of begrudgingly accepts. Like, she doesn't hold out for too long. We could have definitely had another, you know, Carrie being a model and rejecting it for a long time. But Carrie kind of gives in fairly quickly. And they're calling it the last single girl.
Why do I have Diane Arbus circled? Because I want...
So you have Diane Arbus because Enid makes a reference to being photographed in a bridal gown at 40 is the last age you can be photographed in a wedding dress without the, and Candace Bergen says,
40 is the last age a woman can be photographed in a wedding gown without the unintended Deanne Arbus subtext.
So the funny thing about that is that Michael Patrick King had written this joke. It's a very weird joke. So he'd written this joke, and when Candace Bergen said the line, he thought, oh, I have to go tell her she's saying this person's name wrong. She's saying Deanne Arbus. And then, of course, come to find that, like, they knew each other. Her name is Deanne Arbus, if that's how it's pronounced. But Michael Patrick King thought it was Diane. Anyways, it's all kind of a random thing. And I didn't really get the joke. And I guess the joke is just, he doesn't explain the joke, but I guess it's just that Deanne Arbus took pictures of people who weren't necessarily accepted by society. And I think maybe that's all that that's about, is that a bride over 40 is maybe not looked at as acceptable in society. That's the close. If anyone knows a better reasoning for that joke than me, please reach out. That's literally, I looked up a Deanne Arbus wedding dress. That's the closest I could come to figuring out this joke. So feel free to let me know.
I mean, she often photographed people on the fringes of society, mentally ill, transgender people, and circus performers.
So that's kind of all that I can think of as far as what the joke might be. I've seen her work in museums before. Like, she's a mostly, I think, black and white photographer, and she takes beautiful pictures.
Yeah, she was born March 14th, 1923, and died July 26th, 1971.
So we're at the shoot, and Stanford is there.
In those glasses. Still.
And these are all Vogue employees. Like, that's Andrea Leontali, who is the editor at large. Gucci and Sarge are doing makeup and hair. I'm going to say his last name wrong. Patrick Demarchier, I think is how you pronounce it. He's the photographer. He really was the photographer for Vogue. The orchids that are in her hair are from John Galliano's most recent show.
Just your typical Wednesday, hanging out with old friends like Stanford Blatch and new friends like Vera Wang.
She's looking quite at home for someone who didn't think she had the bride jeans.
Well, I guess with the right man.
And the right dress.
For the record, my favorites were the Vera Wang and the Oscar de la Renta.
I'm trying to think of what my favorites were. I did really like the Vera Wang a lot. The Vera Wang is very large. That's where she's lying in the...
That's the first one.
Yeah, on the chaise lounge. Yeah. I think they're all beautiful. They're all very indicative of their stylist in a lot of ways. But it's a fun moment. We have a little wedding dress montage leading into going back to Carrie's apartment, and the impossible has happened.
I've always wanted to get one of those huge boxes with, like, a dress in it. Like, you see it all the time when women's, they're always their husbands, come, or, like, boyfriends, like, surprise them with this perfect dress. It's like, go upstairs, put this on, let's go on a date. And it's, like, in one of these huge boxes, and it always magically fits them.
Yeah. Well, it magically fits Carrie. It's the Vivian Westwood dress. I'll work on that. And Vivian Westwood sent her the dress. And, you know, that is, in fact, Vivian Westwood's handwriting on that note. And we cut to Big and Carrie in bed, and Carrie loving the smell of library books.
Carrie in her night pearls, which is a reoccurring thing.
She wears those pearls a lot, too.
To bed.
Yeah.
She's gonna choke.
She's reading Love Letters of Great Men, Volume 1. She uses his glasses.
Yeah, which they must be the same prescription.
I don't find it cute, but whatever. Get your own damn glasses. I think I just think of people that are like, I just can't see. I didn't bring my glasses. And I'm like, well, that's more
that's
on you.
That's one of your waiter angry things.
Yeah, yeah. Just get some glasses, yo. She's reading some Napoleon.
And she wants to know when he says he sent her a love fax.
When have you ever sent me a love fax?
Yeah.
And she's writing about what happens after you find love. And I will say that he asks her what happens next. And if you ever go back and listen to this podcast, a thing that I say not infrequently is stay tuned. And that's based on her saying that in this moment right now, because I love her response to that.
Love Letters of Great Men, Volume 1.
Oh, am I in there?
No, but some of your classmates are, like Voltaire, Napoleon.
Yeah, and they sort of discuss love letters, and it's not his style. Those guys had to write letters. You know, they were separated by continents and wars. And
they didn't have Wi-Fi.
So we get to New York Public Library, where Carrie is returning books late, because Carrie.
Here's the thing, in the words of Mike Jensen. That library is gorgeous. Yeah. I don't know why Carrie would choose to go to that library, though. She lives on the Upper East Side. That library is at, like, 40th and 5th. It is a library, but getting to the actual books part of it is a little more challenging because they always have exhibits going on. They have a store in there. It's very tourist attraction. So I just think, like, she would just go to a library on the Upper East Side to, like...
I imagine she would as well. Obviously, she goes there for the next scene
right.
to lead us into this. So in my mind, I just justify it as she was at a shop in the neighborhood.
Or maybe Vogue's offices were there.
Sure. And so she just stops by this public library. There was some speculation as whether you can actually check out books from this library. You definitely can drop books off at this library, but anyways, obviously
yeah,
the point of her...
I don't know. That was my question, too, but I was like, I don't want to sound like an idiot.
Yeah, there was a thing that I read that said you can't check out or drop off books there, but I also read that you can drop off books. I just think you don't check things out necessarily. But it's there because she has to see the wedding going on. And, of course, she decides that it's the perfect place to get married. So this next thing is a bonus scene. This isn't even in the extended cut. This is like a Blu-ray bonus moment where we actually
bragging.
Have Carrie... Bragging. Carrie and Big are out to dinner, and she brings up getting married at the public library. And he wonders if it has to be that big. And she says it's just 75 people behind a partition. He does in this scene, and I think this is part of why it was cut. He brings up the fact that this will be his third marriage. And he asks what he had in mind, which he had in mind a judge, good friend, and ham and eggs afterwards. Mm. I think it's a little bit too much foreshadowing as well. Yeah, exactly. And then it sort of ends with a joke of like, will we have to whisper in the library? So yeah, that whole thing was cut. And it makes sense that it was cut for a lot of reasons. But I thought that I would sort of fill in what used to be in this moment. Mm. So the next scene that the rest of us see is Miranda, Steve, Magda... and Brady out to eat.
I just wrote, I love Brady. I love Brady with his pasta sauce all over his face.
Blah. He's just like slurping up that pasta. And Miranda's rushing to leave. So we get our first Lynn Cohen moment. And she's officially the nanny now, clearly.
You can't let the hardworking nanny finish her supper.
And yeah, Miranda has a brief to write. And Brady woke her up at 5 a.m.
He woke us up at 5 a.m.
Yeah. And Miranda kind of gives the look of like, sure he did. And they need to stop letting Brady come into their bed. And she points out the foam on her lip, and she takes it a little personally.
But then Steve wins, and he's cute.
Yeah, he Steves it up. And it is that thing, I guess, when you're already feeling insecure, that anything will make you feel more insecure. Like, he was just saying, you have foam on your lip, and she takes it as like this, why are you always criticizing me?
Right.
Yeah, he makes a joke, and then we segue into what seems like a perfectly nice sexual encounter, until Miranda wants to get it over with.
Yeah.
Which I get, but is probably not the right way to phrase it.
Right.
Because her point being, they have to be awake in 4 hours. And we kind of have the like, you know, we have sex? And when do we have sex?
Harvey Firestein?
When do we have sex? What does he say? You do it.
You have to be Miranda.
We have sex?
When do we have sex?
That was very Newsies.
And then that's what he does.
He's and like, we end with Steve's butt.
Yeah, Steve's butt. He's mad.
Yeah.
He's going to the bathroom to finish the job.
Yeah. And we get our ladies at lunch scene. This is our first one with them at the diner, right?
Yes. I didn't check the salt and peppers.
Oh.
They had a few years. I hope they figured it out.
Got that together. So Miranda asks, you know, how often the girls have sex, and Lily has learned a new word.
Sex.
And Samantha says that she flew 3,000 miles for lunch, which is already extravagant. And Charlotte just wants them to use another word, so we settle on color.
Color.
I do want to note that Carrie is coloring a blue shoe in this scene.
Ooh.
Just put that in your back pocket. And Samantha answers in typical fashion, I color all the time. I'd color all day.
Yeah, and then, you know, a friend of mine pointed this out to me. We were talking about the movie today, and he said, it's so Carrie that she's, like, uptight about that. The sex columnist is like, you know, stop. And then, but she makes that comment about when Big colors, he colors outside the lines. And I was like, does that mean he, like, misses? Like, he puts it in the wrong place?
I was saying it's definitely anal, right? Like,
right, like, colors outside the lines. Like, is she like, wait, that's not my butt? Or is it like, or is he, like, you know, shooting stuff everywhere all over the room? Like, what's happening?
We do kind of get into Miranda's life, which includes a mother-in-law with advancing Alzheimer's. So that is kind of our acknowledgement of where we ended. And then they're just going through a no-coloring phase. It's been 6 months. Yeah. So then we get... Is this what you're talking about, where Carrie gets back to Biggs and we have some kissing?
Yeah, sorry. So, yeah, and she says, John? Yeah, well, she first goes, John? And I'm like, weird. It's just weird to hear her say that. No, this actually isn't the one I'm talking about, because this is the one where he licks her. He, like, licks her chest. But the first time that Carrie and Big make out together, they're kissing, and he, like... I can't put this in the podcast because I'm doing it with my face. But he, like, makes out with her weird, and then, like kisses her nose, like, sucks on it. It's just a lot of weird making out in this movie.
That must have been when they first saw the apartment.
Yes.
Gotcha. Well, listen, he rarely stays within the lines. She just said it.
He misses.
Yeah.
He thought that was her mouth.
Yeah. So Samantha's back on the West Coast, and Smith approaches with something in his underwear.
Yeah. I just wrote Smith's boner.
And it's a gift, and it's the flower ring. And I will say that I personally am financially devastated.
Why?
Because he spent so much money on a thing she was trying to buy. She could have had that ring.
They could have saved for $10,000.
Yes. They just spent $40,000 unnecessary dollars.
Well, here's the thing. If he is her only client and she has enough money to have almost spent $50,000 on it, he has enough money to spend $55,000 on it.
Yeah. I'm sure that's right. True.
And I hate when she's like, my gift is more oral. It's like, is more oral? Or it's just you're going to give him a bloge?
Yeah, I think she means, like, it's less that and more this. Yeah, he wanted to give it to her for their fifth anniversary. And you can see that Samantha isn't really 100% about it. And does clarify.
Oh, I just thought she didn't remember that it was the anniversary.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely part of it, too. But I think she also is kind of annoyed that he bought it. Mm. And she wants to clarify that it's not a diamond ring. It's a ring with diamonds. It's not a diamond ring. Yeah, and she moves in to give him a gift, and he has to go to bed. And she finds this troubling. So we get to her in the hot tub. Mm-hmm. And she hears something.
They reference TiVo.
Oh, do they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this is Gilles, I think is his name. Gilles Marini. We don't get to his character name yet, so I wrote it down and then was like, oh, we're not there quite yet. But this got him, like, his first real acknowledgement, I want to say. But he had long runs on Brothers and Sisters, Switched at Birth. He was on Days of Our Lives for quite a while. He was on an episode of Modern Family that came to my mind. Equal Opportunity, the woman there is Monica Mayhem. She was actually in finance for quite a while and then went into modeling and eventually went into adult film. Which I'm guessing is when she became Monica Mayhem, but I don't know that for sure. That could be her birth name. I don't know.
I was wondering that. I do know that a lot of times they will hire adult film actors for these roles, just, you know, because for a lot of these people, they're like, sure.
Right. And, you know, we have more of this kind of scene. More of this. Okay. We have more scenes like this eventually coming, and I will say that I didn't... write down any other names, but I feel like that's where a lot of these actresses are culled from, which is, you know, of course, totally fine. So now we're kind of flying over Central Park, and we find ourselves in the new apartment, which is clearly under renovation. We do have our first Manolo spotting.
Mm-hmm.
So she's carrying the Manolo bag. So there was an earlier scene. I wish I knew, could remember exactly what it was, but it might have been the first time we see Carrie and she's carrying a shopping bag, and it was supposed to be a Manolo bag, and they sort of got to talking, and they were saying that Manolo was a big deal for the TV series, but maybe we've moved on a little bit. Not that we're not ever going to see it again, but they wanted to make less of a deal out of Manolos at this point. So this is the only time we're going to see a Manolo in the movie. Is this with her with the bag? Also, if you just, I can't say notice her shoes because you're not watching it right now, but she's wearing very specific shoes in this scene that we will eventually see again. So that's another one to put in your mind. And we have a double door closet situation, and this closet is bigger than most New York City apartments.
I wrote, Big gave Carrie a closet bigger than my apartment.
Yeah, where did the space come from? Like,
that's what I'm wondering. Like, what
did another person lose space in their apartment now?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I was like, what? Okay, cool.
Like, yeah, they definitely have one less room than they used to have. And she christens the closet with some new Manolos, and now it's real. So we get to Carrie's apartment and packing because her place sold very quickly.
Right. And Charlotte is rude.
In what way?
Charlotte is rude for bringing out Post-its.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny.
How traumatic. And if you're going to bring out Post-its and do like a keep, toss, donate, whatever, then the yellow Post-its should be tossed because that's what happens. And they should all say, I'm sorry, I can't, don't hate me.
That's a good catch. I hadn't gotten that one. For me more, I just thought, what is the closet? Does she not have more space now? Like, I guess toss if you just don't want it anymore is one thing, but, like, gotta make room for that new tiny closet.
Yeah, I think the idea is, like, you're moving, right, you're moving, so you're going through everything, and, like, you know, as we see in the Carrie Bradshaw fashion show, there's a lot of stuff that she probably doesn't wear anymore.
Sure. And Miranda has buzzed in some food, but it's not food.
It's not food.
It's Samantha.
Yeah.
And Charlotte screams
again. Surprise!
Yeah.
Samantha, okay, so this is a funny story. When I was in college, there was a friend of mine, and I'm not going to use names, who had like moved away. And they would often come back and like, they were older than us, so they would like come back and surprise us. And they would be like, surprise, I'm here. But then it started happening like all the time where it turned into like not even a surprise anymore. We'd be like, do you think Mike's going to show up? So like that's what I was thinking about every time Samantha like surprised them.
Yeah, and Charlotte screams every time, and then she has her two bottles of bubbly, and that's fun. So Samantha puts on some Run DMC and the fashion show begins. So we have the red number with the crazy black shoulder ornaments that only Samantha says to take, and then the green prom dress that Miranda refers to as Madonna.
I think just because it's 80s.
Doesn't really look like Madonna to me, but I guess so. And that gets a take from Charlotte. And then, of course, we have the tutu.
The Carrie tutu with the dance, which is like the ultimate gif.
Which gets takes from all of them. And then the rest of this is all extended. So after this, we do see Carrie in a few more looks.
Hold on one second, though. About that tutu, I found it funny that all the girls are like, aw, with the tutu. It's like, oh, Carrie, that's what you wear in the opening scene for your TV show. That, you know what I mean? It's like, how do they, you know?
No, very true. They're like, oh, so nostalgic. Opening
so
credits.
Nostalgic of like the opening credits of this show.
That's pretty funny, actually. Yeah, so Carrie has a few more looks, and then the girls take over. So we have Miranda wears like a leopard print, and Charlotte has an Andy Warhol Marilyn dress, and then like a weird sort of hip-hop rapper getup. Samantha has a black and silver and gold Jody Watley getup. All of this was cut.
Who's Jody Watley?
How dare you? She was a singer from, you know, around that era. Not this era, but like 80s, 90s. And Lily emerges. At one point, they have Lily as part of the fashion show. And I will say, she's only wearing her underwear and a bunch of purses, which does seem like Carrie. And I guess the little girl who played Lily got really nervous and said that she had to pee and then went and peed in the fake toilet.
I'm looking at Jody Watley songs to see if I know anything. I mean, I know, do they know it's Christmas?
So in your version, do they end up dancing? What happens next in your version? So I know.
Well, first of all, did the food ever come?
No, apparently not.
They're hungry.
They're eating food. They're eating food on the bed at some point, aren't they?
Not in my version. In my version, they never get the food.
Is there any more in the apartment?
After the Carrie tutu, it cuts to four friends, 3 days, 20 years, 38 boxes.
Okay, cool. So then there's some dancing on the bed. And then, they finish up the boxes. The apartment is empty. So I think this gets back to the theatrical version that you saw. And Carrie picks up her computer in your version or not?
And leaves. Like, that's last thing she takes.
Yeah, Carrie picks up her computer, turns the light off, and then off she goes. So then we get to Miranda and Steve's, and something is clearly wrong.
Yes.
And we get there pretty quickly. Steve doesn't really try to hide it.
Well, she has a Key Food grocery bag, and that's my grocery store.
Oh. And Steve had sex with someone else.
Yeah, and I just wrote, F you, Steve!
Yeah, it sucks. And he says it's killing him.
She's like, it's killing you?
He wasn't thinking. And she tells him not to follow her. But then she eventually goes into the bedroom. And she is wearing, did you notice the t-shirt looks like sort of an exploding heart?
Oh, I didn't do the imagery.
It's a nice little bit of clothing symbolism that we have there. And Steve has this moment of, Miranda, it's still me. And she says,
is it?
And frustratingly, that is where we're going to end part one of our journey through the movie.
Ugh.
But we'll be back next week with part two. If you've just stumbled upon this podcast, you should know that Elise and I have done over 100 episodes covering the entire Sex and the City series. So check those out and make sure to change your settings to play in sequential order. For more information, like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at We Couldn't Help But Wonder with no caps, no spaces, and no punctuation, and Twitter at WCHBW Podcast. You can follow Elise at Evie Castle and me at MikeJensen77. We would love it if you would share this podcast with someone. Put a link on Facebook or tell a friend. Take a moment and rate us on Apple Podcasts, or even better, write a review there. Most importantly, stay safe and let's all take care of each other.
And this is the little boy that would go on to, I don't know, I was going to say something very dramatic. Lot 39, a chandelier.
Yeah, sorry. I was waiting for that. I paused even, thinking you would like break in with it.
With the Phantom reference.
It's a hard word for you. We do this every once in a while.
But you can... And when you said, and there's several Golden Blats, in my mind, I keep thinking you're saying Golden Girls. And I'm just picturing, like Blanche, Rose, Sophia, all just...
Only three of them are invited,
Dorothy,
though.
Yeah, just sitting at the table. But wait, we didn't talk about how in Carrie and Big... Have they already had the weird kiss where he, sucks on her nose?
No.
Okay, never mind.
But I'm going to put that in somewhere.
Oh, no, you froze.
You're frozen, too, so don't yell at me.
Come back. Okay, you're there.
You're there, too.
Mike, that's fun. Where's the vodka?
I'm not drinking this week, Elise.
Oh, sorry. Gosh. I don't know your schedule.